Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. With you, as always, I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Ryan Bonaparte.
And we're here after what has got to be one of the most thrilling, exciting, joyful, amazing Purdue sports weekend in my lifetime, maybe even ever. Purdue with three victories in basketball, two over top 10 opponents in walks, an amazing victory over IU that clinched the Big Ten West. I mean, just an absolute bonkers weekend. Ryan, can you think of anything that compares to this in Purdue and your fandom?
Not this scale, back to back to back to back to back.
Right.
Straight events. Whew. I mean, it's just uncalled for, or not uncalled for. It doesn't happen to Purdue fans. What is this feeling?
I don't know. It's wild. It's wild. And, I mean, it just built and built and built over the entirety of the weekend. Starting out on Thursday, you know, Thanksgiving Day with that game against West Virginia. So we're going to go through everything that's happened since our last podcast, which is quite a bit. You know, like I said, Purdue has played three basketball games and a football game. So we thought it'd be fun to kind of go through and relive the weekend as it happened. No question today, we've got too much to cover. So Purdue starts out the Phil Knight Invitational with a game against West Virginia. This was a game at, 10:30 was the tip-off?
I believe so.
Yeah, 10:30 tip-off, and West Virginia is a good team. I mean, a Bob Huggins coach team, whether they're unranked or not, is always going to be a tough game, and certainly was going to be Purdue's toughest opponent to date. They just beaten Marquette in their most recent game by 5, heading into Portland, Oregon, you know, neutral site game, which is always better for your NCAA tournament resume against West Virginia. Purdue walks out of there with a double-digit victory, 80-68, and just they looked so good doing it. Pulling up the stats now, Ryan, I know you've already got them up. Who was it that stood out to you in that game?
So it's quite obvious. It's almost always our go-to now. It's still Zach Edey.
Right.
He just towers over everyone. He had 24 points in 27 minutes, 7 of 12 from the field, 10 of 12 from the free throw line, 12 rebounds, and he did have some turnovers. He had a bit of an issue against his Bob Huggins defense. He had 4 personal fouls, 6 turnovers, so they were getting to him a bit, but he just still willed his way into getting his shot, and it ended up working for him in the end.
Yeah. I think one thing with Edie, we're going to see a lot. I mean, he's going to have fits of turnovers, but I don't think it's all his fault. I mean, as we've said on this podcast dozens and dozens of times, officials just don't know how to officiate someone his size. So he has to be, like, brutally hacked to get the foul call. Whereas, you know, if they're hanging on his body or hanging on his arm, he won't necessarily get that call like he would if he were 6'6". So some of those turnovers, I think, are him often getting fouled but not getting the call. It's just the nature of the way the NCAA officials call games.
Absolutely. And, you know, they even mentioned that in today's game, recording on Sunday, that the sheer size of Zach Edey, when you're going up against people that small comparatively, it's just unfathomable for someone to be that much larger than these towering guys. I mean, I'm 6'3", and that's just sane to me.
Yeah, did you happen to catch the interview clip that Andy Katz put online with Zach Edey's mom?
Absolutely. Yep, she's 6'3". She's 6'3". The runt of the litter.
Yeah, she's 6'3", and she's the smallest one in the family. She said Zach Edey got taller than her when he was 12 years old. Just
6'3" at 12.
I mean, wow. Just astounding. And to think that no one told him to play basketball until, you know, it's like 6 years ago in his life. Just wild. That would never happen if he grew up in America. He would have had a basketball in his hands when he was six.
Oh yeah, but did you know Zach Edey played baseball and hockey?
Yeah, that's the first. You know, I said so. Somebody put that out on Twitter, and I said, "Oh my gosh, that's the first I'm hearing of this." And somebody responded, "Are you serious? They say it on every broadcast." I'm like, "Yes, I'm joking. This is a Purdue website Twitter account. Yes, I knew that. I watch every game."
Kind of like last year. Did you know that Jaden Ivey's mom was the head coach of Notre Dame?
No, I don't. I think I would have heard something about that if that were the case.
Crazy.
Yeah, same things every game.
Still growing. He's. They said, I think yesterday or today.
I think it was today. Yeah,
7'6".
I just like,
okay.
It's
sure.
I mean, it's crazy. So I mean, he obviously had a great game. Two other people that I think deserve a special call out in this game. One is Ethan Morton. He had 28 minutes, tops on the team. Didn't have a great shooting night, only 1 for 4, but he was 2 from 2 at the line, grabbed 2 rebounds, but he had 9 assists against 0 turnovers. And, you know, that Ethan Morton is not a flashy player, but that is the kind of game that he can put together when all of a sudden you look up at the stat sheet and you're like, oh my gosh, he has 9 assists. And it didn't really feel like he did anything out of the ordinary for him. He had some great passes and people connected on the shots. So kudos to him. And also Mason Gillis, 24 minutes, 4 for 5 from the floor, including 2 for 3 from 3-point line and 4 for 5, from the free throw line, to go along with 5 rebounds, and 2 steals. So 14 points overall for him. He was the only other Boilermaker in double figures, but man, it was just, this team is so good at sharing the ball and finding the open man, making the extra pass. It's amazing to me because there are so many new pieces.
Right, and you saw this. I mean, West Virginia had not given up 60 points in a game for their entire season up until this point. Purdue dropped 80 on them.
Mm-hmm.
They will find the open man. They will not take a bad shot if there is another open man on a wing. There's 5 or 6 times each game you'll think, okay, shoot the 3, it's a good shot, and then they will just dish to the wing, and it is a wide-open shot.
Yeah.
And it feels good to see Mason Gillis get those 3s to fall. He's been having a bit of issue from beyond the arc this year, and once he gets going, we saw what he can do behind the line, especially if he has the wide opens. He can make those shots. So it's good for his confidence to see the ball go in the basket.
Yeah, and I mean, last year he was roughly 40% from 3. So if he can continue that clip this year, obviously great news for Purdue, great news for Zach Edey as it continues to spread the opposing defense out. So, you know, Trey Kaufman Wren looked good. He had 15 minutes, wound up with 7 points. You know, no one really looked bad. Lawyer had a not great shooting night. He was 1 of 5, but it's hard to come up with complaints when you beat a West Virginia team by 12. You know, Purdue did turn the ball over 18 times, but they're a young team. They're still finding themselves. They've got two guards who start as freshmen. So to commit 18 turnovers, you don't love it, but you can live with it when you look at it as a learning experience and you still win by 12.
Right, absolutely. Plus, the team got, as a whole, got to the free throw line 28 times.
Yeah.
That was a pretty consistent standard for Purdue this weekend, is they got to the line and they made their shots. They were 24 or 28 against West Virginia.
Yeah.
That is winning basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they scored 13 more points at the free throw line than West Virginia did, and they won the game by 12. So, you know, that's the ball game right there. And overall, again, you're pointing out good free throw shooting. Purdue also, as a team, shot very well from beyond the arc, 8 of 17, 47%. So Purdue looked good on offense when they got the shots up. The only problem really was the turnovers. But as I said, you assume it's going to be a difficult game when you're playing West Virginia. Bob Huggins, known for his good defense. So Purdue, even with those turnovers, they also did out-rebound West Virginia 35-31. So overall, just a very good game for Purdue. You would have liked to see fewer turnovers and would have liked to have seen West Virginia get fewer offensive rebounds. They had 15. But, you know, again, Purdue out-rebounded them overall. So, again, hard to quibble with what we got in that West Virginia game. Is there anything else about that game you want to chat about before we move on to the next one?
Well, strangely enough, going back to the offensive rebounds for West Virginia, some of those are actually just due to the fact that Purdue is putting in too much effort. It's two Purdue players go up for a rebound at the same time and knock it away from each other.
Yeah, we saw that a couple times. Turnovers. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's almost a good problem to have. I mean, obviously you want to clean that up, but the effort is there and it's extremely noticeable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, effort is, I don't think ever will be a question for this Purdue team. They hustle for everything. In fact, there was a moment in that game where I think it was Braden Smith saved the ball and threw it beyond half court, and then Lawyer went after it as well to try to save it. Ultimately couldn't save it, but it went out of bounds under Purdue's basket, and so it forced West Virginia to take the ball out with just 1 second to go on the shot clock, and West Virginia couldn't get anything off. Ultimately, you know, then Purdue gets the ball back under their own basket. I mean, it was just an incredible hustle play.
Absolutely. And those are the plays that you remember. Those are the memorable plays. Just the effort is incredible. I know sometimes there was a question of effort last year.
Oh, yeah.
But that will not be the case this year.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a problem now. So Purdue won game one of the Phil Knight Invitational. That means they awaited the winner of Portland State and Gonzaga. That, of course, was Gonzaga. So Gonzaga and Purdue met on Friday, and that was an 11:41 p.m. Eastern tip-off. So before we get into the game, Ryan, you're in Central Time right now. Is that correct?
Correct.
So for you, it was a 10:41 tip. How did you hold up as far as staying up for the game and getting through the game? I know you're a young buck compared to me.
See, I'm starting to get sleepy. I'm getting old. But yeah, both of these games are hard because Thursday night you were still sleepy from your Thanksgiving dinner, and then Friday night you're sleepy from your leftovers.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what it'd be like at home.
Yeah.
Where it's on Eastern time.
It was rough. It was about 8 o'clock and I was like, oh my God, I have almost 4 hours before this game starts. Cause I knew it wasn't going to start right at 11:30. Cause you're the second game, you know, it's always going to be a little bit later than they say. So like I said, it ended up being 11:41 tip off. By the time the game started, my wife was already asleep on the couch and I don't blame her. But I was able to stay awake, had a Coke Zero in me, that I started at about halftime or so, really powered me through. And thank goodness I did, because what a basketball game this was. Purdue faced number 6 ranked Gonzaga. I think that's important to point out. And came away with an 84-66 victory and outscored them in the second half 51-38. And then in the first half, held Gonzaga to just 28. So just a dominating performance. Purdue struggled at the outset of the game, looked very shaky, couldn't seem to get anything going. But once they turned it on, they did not turn it off the entirety of the game. It was just a brilliant performance from everyone involved.
Absolutely. And everyone who played, I think, except Waddell and Jenkins didn't get any points, but they still made contributions in some limited minutes. But I mean, this was obviously a Zach Edey game again, but it was the freshmen that came to play.
Oh, yeah.
Brayden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, 33 and 34 respective minutes, 14 points between the two of them. They looked like they were just, they looked like seasoned veterans. And,
yeah.
And it was such a good matchup between Zach Edey and Drew Timmy, who is still on Gonzaga, apparently. He's not retired.
Yep.
That you had probably the best matchup you can have between big men in the season in this one, and it did not disappoint.
No.
Zach Edey and Drew Timmy just went blow for blow. Edey scored 23, Timmy scored 22. There were points you just had to applaud Drew Timmy. He would just make a shot somehow out of the blue, and you're like, okay, you know what? Good for him. He just, kudos, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
it was just, you were giddy to watch the game. It was just marvelous to watch.
And I mean, him and Timmy weren't on each other, guarding each other the entirety of the game, but they were at spurts. And I mean, you gotta, like you said, you gotta respect Timmy for making those shots over a 7'4" Edey who was busting his ass on defense when Timmy was out there. I think he probably took it as a little bit of a challenge, you know, because Timmy gets so much publicity and so much more, I think, respect in a lot of corners of the national media than Zach Edey does. And I think Edey was kind of like, this is a good chance for me to go out there and prove who I can be. And he certainly, certainly stepped up. But to your point from earlier, I mean, Brayden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, 33 and 34 minutes respectively. Combined, the two of them had 28 points, 12 assists, and 8 rebounds.
That's a good day.
I mean, those are two, again, two true freshmen playing against the number 6 team in the nation on what was essentially a home court for Gonzaga. You know, this is in their neck of the woods. The two of them only turned it over 3 times. It was the best they have played there in their short Purdue careers. I mean, at this point, it only had been 5 games, but my goodness, they looked fantastic. And to top it off, 7 from 8 from the free throw line for the two of them. And that's the kind of thing that keeps you on the floor at the end of games.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you mentioned turnovers. Zach Edey only had 1 turnover in this game and 3 blocks. So he's learning to time his jump.
Yes.
And it is just spectacular.
Yeah.
Normally, he knows now that he doesn't always have to jump.
Right. Yeah, you're 7'4".
Shoot over 7'4". Yeah, that's not normal. So he's learning that, and he knows that if he does jump, you're getting your hands on the ball.
Yeah.
It's so great to see him learn this and learn how not to foul, that he's able to put in so many more minutes. Because Casey mentioned this last week, when he has the ball, this is the best offense in the country.
Yeah.
And I think he proved that. He proved Casey's point this
week. Yeah, I mean, this everybody on this team has just played, I think, to the best of their ability. It's really amazing. I was watching this game, and maybe it's the Purdue fan in me, maybe it's just the fact that this team is so young and untested. I was just waiting for something to go wrong. You know, I was like, Gonzaga's going to chip away, something's going to go on, but they didn't. You know, Purdue took the punches, they didn't allow Gonzaga to get back in this game, and, I mean, it truly was, I mean, up until today, was the best I've seen this team play. Even in probably, you know, if you include last year's team, it was one of the best games I've seen a Purdue team play in recent memory. It was absolutely beautiful, beautiful basketball, fun to watch, entertaining, and, I mean, it just filled my heart with joy. It was that good.
And another thing you realize about Edey, his defense was besides the blocks, his normal defense was working very well. The two people that Edie would mainly guard throughout this game were Anton Watson and the tall backup guy, Greg. Between the two of them, they scored 9 points and accounted for 9 fouls. So when you can foul out a guy without scoring, essentially, it's great. And 6 of those points that Greg scored were 3-pointers. Zach Edey doesn't really go out to the 3-point line. He'll give you that shot. He's not about to get sucked into a pick and roll on the top of the key. So
I mean, if Zach Edey's guy is shooting a 3, that's probably, from a statistical standpoint, that's probably a shot you're okay with.
Exactly. So it's just, at this point, teams are just throwing bodies in just so that they can try and keep up with Zach Edey, and they're not doing it. No one can keep up with him right now.
No. And I mean, again, you pointed out Drew Timmy, one of the best in the country. We saw him try, and he couldn't do it. So just absolutely phenomenal. So this victory put Purdue at 5-0, moved them into the finals of the Phil Knight Invitational. At that point, we did not know, or no, we already knew it was going to be Duke. That's right.
Correct.
So Purdue would get Saturday off and they would play on Sunday. So we're going to cover today's game against Duke after the break. But I do, you know, want to mention one more thing that happened on Friday that, you know, we're not going in the exact order, but Nebraska and Iowa played on Friday. And in order for Purdue to win the Big Ten West, Iowa had to lose to Nebraska, a Nebraska team that has been off kilter, that has fired their coach midseason, that has not been like the Nebraska they want to be. But somehow, some way, they found a way to win. And
Nebraska corn is better.
Ryan, I know you didn't believe that Nebraska could pull it off. So how shocked were you as you followed that game along?
Oh boy, Nebraska was up 24-0 in this game, and I just was hoping it wouldn't come crashing down, to which I thought it was the most Purdue thing ever. They allowed 17 unanswered points to an Iowa offense, and just, it was, I was nervous.
Oh, me too.
They pulled it out. They pulled it out, and I was happy.
Yeah, it was so close to a disaster. It was like the miracle on the Hudson. It's like, I got a goose in my engine. I'm going to somehow land it in the lake or in the river. I'm going to be okay. But man, it wasn't exactly pretty. So I'll tell you, it was one of the most fun experiences I've had on Twitter when it's not a Purdue game, because there were so many Purdue fans on Twitter tweeting about this Iowa-Nebraska game, rooting for Nebraska because, you know, everybody knows it was the only way Purdue could get to the Big Ten title game was if Nebraska could pull this off. And I don't think most of us really thought Nebraska could do it. I thought there was a chance, but, you know, nothing really made me believe that it was actually going to happen. And then you could see as the score went up, you know, to 17-0, to 24-0, Purdue fans are like, I think this might actually happen. And then you see the Purdue fans starting to get nervous, like, oh, we're going to blow it on the bucket game. Oh, this would be the most Purdue thing ever, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're not wrong, but, like, it was a lot of fun watching it go down with another team and knowing that if that happened, it just added so much more to the bucket game. It was just so fun.
And it was in Kinnick, too, so you just saw the faces of the Iowa fans just start melting away. It's good to see another program go through that.
Yeah. We're not the only ones out there who are experiencing this. So, I mean, it was so fun. So Nebraska hangs on 24-17, and that sets up a showdown on Saturday, Purdue IU 3:30. And we are going to cover that when we come back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com. Let's
go. And we are back. So, as we left off, Iowa has lost to Nebraska. Purdue is headed to Bloomington with the Old Oaken Bucket on the line. And not just the Old Oaken Bucket. If Purdue wins this game, they go to the Big Ten West Championship for the first time ever. First time ever. They would be representing the Big Ten West against the winner of Michigan-Ohio State, which turns out to be Michigan, in a surprise, I think, victory to a lot of people. So, you know, you have to think, if you're Purdue, you're like, this is a game we can win. This is a game we should win. This is setting up so perfectly for Purdue. And yet, they come out of the gate flat. They go up 3-0. Allow a long run to IU for a touchdown. I think it was like 71 yards to Jalen Lucas, and suddenly they're down 7-3, and that was all the scoring in the entirety of the first half. And oh man, were things getting dark on Purdue Twitter.
Absolutely.
Because this is a podcast and we've talked about these things hundreds of times, I will say, yes, I was at Bluey for the first part of the game. Bluey started at 3 o'clock. It was a 50-minute show. So, honestly, and honest to God, worth every penny that I paid for it. And my son had a great time, smiling, cheering, laughing, pointing at the stage, and behaved perfectly. We're in the middle of potty training, had no accidents the entire day. So, kudos to him. And so, we leave. And I just bought a car like 2 weeks ago, the day of the Northwestern game. And with every new car you buy these days, they give you like 3 months of Sirius XM. So I'm like, this is perfect. They can chill in my wife and my son can chill in the back. I turned on the game on Sirius XM. So I listened to the vast majority of the second quarter. I think I had about 10 and a half minutes left when I got in the car. So listened to the rest of the second quarter. Listened to the beginning of the third quarter on the rest of the drive home, and then watched the rest. And no joke, I walk in the house, not 2 to 3 plays later, Purdue scores a touchdown. And I was like, this is it. This is it. We're going to do it. And, I mean, that put Purdue up 10 to 7, and from there on, they did not look back, but, you know, ended up winning 30-16, but it was ugly. Just absolutely ugly. I think it's important to point out we saw an injury to IU's quarterback, Dexter Williams II. Obviously, it was a non-contact injury, so not good. Probably a knee, we assume. I haven't seen anything official, but you just hate to see that for anybody. We really hope he is doing well, and if it is a knee injury, as we all assume, that he can rehab and come back, because he's obviously a very talented young guy, and you hate to see something like that. But yeah. You know,
I think he said he had that knee injury before during the game. So unfortunately, sometimes those are recurring. So hopefully he's able to come back and, you know, give some good competition to us Boilermakers.
That's right. So. Overall, I mean, the Purdue defense, actually, they played pretty well, had their usual boneheaded mistakes, you know, including at the end of the game to allow that last touchdown, some boneheaded penalties, but it's hard to argue with the results when you only allow 16 points, but on the offensive end, Purdue continues to really struggle. They can't really seem to find their footing. Aiden O'Connell, 18 of 29 for 290 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, so continuing your 3-2-1-0 hypothesis that you had a few weeks back. But it came out after the game that Aiden O'Connell had lost his brother on, I believe, Wednesday before the game. So when you take that into account, it makes it even more incredible that he was even able to get out there. As someone who has 3 older brothers myself, and this guy, Aiden's older brother was the one who passed away, to think that my brother could pass away and then 3 days later I could go out and do something so incredible like this is to take my team to a Big Ten championship game and win the Old Oaken Bucket. I mean, it boggles the mind, and we really hope that he and his family can find some peace and get through this incredibly difficult time. But the poise he showed to be able to go out and do that is something I don't think most of us can truly imagine.
I could not imagine going through the situation he's going through right now. I too all have an older brother, and I mean, it's such an incredibly difficult time. So we hope that he does what's best for him, and that, you know, he's got all of our support, whatever he needs. I'm sure we can do whatever we can for him. He certainly deserves it, and we wish him nothing but and his family.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So on the offensive side, I mean, Charlie Jones, another great game. Only had 4 catches, but it was for 143 yards and a touchdown. So more in line with what you predicted. You predicted 12 catches, 104 yards, 2 touchdowns. So, you know, not too bad. We both overestimated how many receptions he would have. You said 12, I said 8. But, you know, overall, just another great game for him. Devin Mockaby, you pointed out as we were on the break, finished with 99 yards rushing and a touchdown. Also added 58 yards receiving, you know, for a total of 157 all-purpose yards there for him. You know, we had a bit of a scare during the game when he got hit, came out, and everybody thought it was maybe a knee injury, but he was back in, I believe, on the next series and continued to run. So that was a huge relief for everybody in Boiler Nation.
So Devin needs 151 in 2 games to 1,000 for the year.
You gotta think he's gonna get there.
I trust Jeff Brohm to put the ball in his hands enough to get him 151.
Yeah. So speaking of Jeff Brohm and running the ball, I've gotta voice some frustration. So Purdue goes down in the first drive. I think Mockaby had 24 or 26 yards on the first drive alone, and then only finished the half with 5 carries. And you know, they have the sideline reporters down there, and they're always like, you know, what, talking to the head coach, what do you think you need to do differently? What do you blah, blah, blah. And Brohm said something to the effect of, you know, I really wish we would have run the ball more. That's on me, blah, blah, blah. I got away from what was working. Brohm does this every second or third game, complains about his own play calling. And you're like, first, it's like, buddy, you call the plays. If you realize you're not doing something you should do, you have no one to blame but yourself. And yes, taking the blame and realizing it was your mistake, that's great. But I would rather you just quit making that mistake. It's just, it boggles the mind how often Jeff Brohm complains about his own play calling and how he got away from it. It frustrates the hell out of me.
And to some of that, I think sometimes Jeff Brohm sees a 2 or 3 yard gain as not good enough for the rushing game. The problem is, Devin Mockaby was averaging like 8 yards a run, but to what degree was he hurting? You know, we saw him go down. He was on the ground for a while. He came out of the game and then he ended up going back in. But how much is that Jeff saying, okay, we don't want you to get hurt, or we don't think you're 100% to keep running the ball too much? And I don't think Coach Brohm has too much confidence in running game beyond Devin Mockaby. Tyrone Tracy and Dylan Downing only had 1 touch each. So
yeah, a total of 5 yards between them. So the only thing I'll quibble with is I don't think the injury that turned out not to be, I guess, an injury to Mockaby was either in the late third or fourth quarter. So that doesn't really excuse what happened in the first half that he then complained about. But man, He's got to tighten this up. He's got to figure out what he's doing down there. IU had one of the worst rush defenses in the country, and you got to exploit that, especially with a guy like Mockaby who's been so great. I know we had injuries on the offensive line. Hartwig is out, obviously, but you have to exploit the weaknesses of the opponent, and Brohm wasn't doing that and then criticized himself for not doing that. So it's a very frustrating situation, but you know, we can quibble all we want, but it was just absolutely incredible. Purdue wins. I want to point out the Corey Trice touchdown in the fourth quarter was pretty perfect. The IU guy bobbles the ball, tries to get a couple more yards, and Trice just literally wrestles the ball away from him while standing and just waltzes into the end zone for a touchdown. What a punctuation mark right on the scoring for it Purdue.
And the defense truly only get, like, I understand they gave up 16 points, but in all honesty, they gave up one field goal, a 71-yard touchdown on a broken play that was kind of just like an option play, and a few missed tackles, and then a garbage time touchdown as clock. The defense held its own today, but it was really, Indiana had a game plan throughout the entire week, and when your quarterback goes down, all of that gets thrown right out. Luckily for them, they had Connor Blazelak, so he's been in that role already this season, but you don't game plan against anybody, or you never game planned against Purdue with that quarterback up until this week, and he wasn't the starting quarterback, so...
Yeah. Well, and the fact that he had been the starting quarterback and then was benched in favor of Dexter Williams II, you would almost, you assume, hey, this guy's not playing. He got benched from his starting role early in the year. So I understand it can make things a little difficult. But, I mean, he did. He ended up throwing 42 passes, which is astounding considering when we talked about their IU's last game against Michigan State, mm-hmm. they only threw 7. So quite the change. But it didn't matter. Purdue walks away 30-16 victory. They keep the bucket. They're heading to Indianapolis. We're the Big Ten West champs at 8-4, 6-3 overall in the conference. And, you know, we're going to cover this more mm-hmm. in our next podcast.
Not even a coach.
I'm shocked.
They are outright.
Oh, is it really? They're outright. Not even Illinois?
I believe that Illinois has 4 losses in conference.
It's wild. Absolutely wild.
This is everyone expected.
When Casey and I did our Illinois 5-4 in conference. Absolutely crazy. When Casey and I did our preseason discussion of what we thought football could do, honestly, we were both with our black and gold glasses. We had them at 10-2 as a best case scenario, and we're not that far off. We almost won that Penn State game, won that Syracuse game. And that would have put Purdue at 10-2. But ultimately, we're Big Ten West champions. We're not going to remember in the future those little tiny losses. And we're going to remember we're Big Ten West champions. We got the bucket. We got the cannon. We're heading to Indianapolis on December 3rd, 8 p.m., I believe, is the kickoff to take on the Michigan Wolverines. And, hey, let's shock the world one more time. What a way to end this year for Purdue football regular season. Absolutely perfect. So, you ready to move on to today, Sunday's final Purdue game?
Let's keep the train rolling.
So, Purdue in the finals of the Phil Knight Invitational, taking on the number 8 ranked Duke Blue Devils. And anytime you play Duke, you know it's going to be a game. Duke has been one of the Blue Bloods, I think, the entirety of my life. They've had a few down years here and there, but that happens to everybody, and they're never down for long. They're mm-hmm. always coming back. We've seen, you know, Purdue play Duke in the Big Ten ACC Challenge when Robbie Hummel, I believe, was at Purdue, got absolutely blown out. Purdue played Duke in the Sweet 16 back in, I believe, 2009 in Houston, Texas. I went to that game. Purdue got absolutely blown out. And it has not been good for Purdue to play Duke in recent memory. However, this was a completely different ball game. Purdue walks away with a 75-56 victory, a 19-point victory over the number 8 team in the country. And just, again, they started out a little slow. Duke was ahead. But once Purdue pulled ahead, they led the rest of the game, pushed it almost to 20 points. And if you would have told me a month ago that this Purdue team with a true freshman starting point guard, a true freshman guard and Fletcher Lawyer would beat Gonzaga and Duke by double digits, I would have called you a liar and slapped you in the face. Like, could you imagine this, Ryan? There's no way.
I think us Purdue fans were coming into this tournament thinking, okay, let's, you know, get past West Virginia, let's be competitive with Gonzaga, and let's get us a third win on, you know, in a consolation game. Nowhere near what we expected, as in three games, Purdue beat by double digits, three straight teams, and then the two latter teams are top 10 teams. I believe on Twitter they said this is the second time this has ever occurred, that on a neutral court, two top 10 teams in a weekend. This was insane. I mean, there was points in the game where you just were like, okay, pinch me. I don't know if this is real. What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, and to your point, Purdue is second team ever to beat two AP top 10 teams by 18-plus points on a neutral site in the same week, joining only UCLA in the 1968 Final Four.
Pretty good
four.
Coach on that team, too.
And yeah, pretty good coach. They might have had a guy you probably heard of. I believe his name is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Great in the movie Airplane. You would never know it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He really disappeared into the role. But every time it looked like Duke was coming back in that second half, I believe they got it down to nine, seven, or maybe even eight at one point. And Purdue just counterpunched. Purdue was ready. Purdue was waiting. I think was it Fletcher Lawyer who hit the three at under 4 minutes to put Purdue back up by 12. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the game was over. There was no coming back from it. It was under 4 minutes left. The lead was double digits. Purdue was looking confident. The crowd was into it. I mean, everything about this game was just wonderful. I mean, this was NCAA tournament basketball played in the month of November. I mean, this was March basketball in November, and Purdue is playing just incredible basketball right now.
Purdue played two different styles of basketball in this game. Duke in the second half decided to go with a 2-3 zone and did full court press. So Purdue was not doing the same stuff. Mind you, they scored 17 less points in the second half, but I mean, they still made it work. They found out that you can go to the center of the court with a pass when you have full court press, and Caleb First was perfect in that role throughout the day. He would get right over midcourt, he'd be in the center for the outlet pass, and it was, I don't think a single turnover was committed by Purdue because of the full court pass or press. They did slow down the sets. They made it so you couldn't get the ball into Zach Edey as easily, but they didn't force the too many turnovers with that press, which was really good to see.
Yeah, just 11 turnovers for Purdue, which was equal to what Duke had. I think there might have been at least one turnover that was based on that pressure. I believe Purdue threw it to a Duke guy, but to your point, I mean, not very many. But Caleb First, you pointed out, excellent game for Caleb First. Probably the best game he's had in about a season and a half. Played 24 minutes, grabbed 10 rebounds, had 11 points, 2 assists, 1 block, 0 turnovers. He just looked great in this game. It looked great against Gonzaga, too, we should point out. A couple really great dunks, a lot of energy in that game. And Caleb First is really, really rounding into form. What I think a lot of us thought he was going to be last year before he got COVID and kind of hit that freshman wall that, you know, they all tend to do. So Zach Edey, again, another great game. 7 of 13, 21 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 0 turnovers. Whenever Purdue needed somebody, somebody stepped up. Whether that was Lawyer going 4 for 8 from 3, whether that was Edey with just, you know, he's just a I need a bucket, get me the ball kind of guy this year. 32 minutes. 32 minutes for the big man. Just, we didn't think this was, we did not think or expect that he was going to be playing 30 plus minutes a night nearly every game, and yet here we are, and he's looked phenomenal against absolutely stellar competition.
And he forced two Duke players to foul out in Lively and Filipowski. And Filipowski is one of the better biggies. Yeah, he's one of the better big men in the country. So he ended up with 14 points, so he still made an impact. I believe he was second on the team. Yeah, there was a 14, a 16 by Proctor, and 14 by Roach. So, yeah. I mean, outside of those three players, Duke had almost nothing going on. The next closest was 6 points by Whitehead. So, I mean, defense worked hard in this game, and they got it done. I mean, 21 points in the second half for Duke.
Yeah.
That's it. That's a good day.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the scoreboard, and you're like, wow, 56 points is all Duke could muster. And then you go in, and you look at kind of like the play-by-play and the score summary, and Purdue only allowed Duke to score 1 point in the final 9 minutes and 17 seconds of game time. And that, obviously, 1 point was a free throw. And that is almost a half of a half, and Duke mustered 1 point. 1 point. The Purdue defense just absolutely locked down. They found a way to slow down the number 8 ranked team, and they were going hard after the rebounds to prevent second chance opportunities. I mean, they did everything right in this game. Everything. I mean, the biggest complaint I think I saw on Twitter was, like you mentioned, I think in either the West Virginia or Gonzaga game, they were going after rebounds so hard that they were causing two Purdue players to collide, and Duke got some rebounds that way. But if that's our biggest complaint, I mean, man, we're absolutely living right.
And you just saw that Purdue looks like it's just long out there. Each player looks like they got about 4 more inches on their wingspan. They are long, and I think I will forever have the image of Brayton Smith jumping at a defender, because he does it every time. He will go and he will be going after a shooter. Now, usually you don't want that, but just, again, it's an effort. He is putting, you know, pedal to the floor just to get to every ball and get up a shot block. And once he gets one of those, we will be in awe for the next couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this team, it's some of the most fun I've had watching basketball, at least Purdue basketball, in 4 or 5 years, because everyone out there is busting their ass, and they're so talented, they're so athletic, they're so skilled. To your point, they're so long. It's just incredible. Fletcher Lawyer today, again, true freshman playing against Duke on a neutral court, 6 of 14, he had 18 points, 2 steals, 2 rebounds, only 1 turnover. Mason Gillis, 2 for 2 from 3, 8 total points. You know, we saw Brian Waddell dunk the basketball
ACL
today
fine to
in
me.
6 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Brian Waddell was like a, you know, no shade to Brian Waddell, but he was a guy who we didn't think would really play that much this year. And here he is getting 6 minutes against Duke. You know, and they weren't garbage minutes. These were important, impactful minutes. And I mean, everyone on this team. David Jenkins Jr. had a great game. He only played, only scored 4 points, but one of them was a turnaround jumper with 1 second left on the shot clock. That is just a dagger to defenses. Yep. Just a dagger to a defense. When you play 29 seconds, a great defense. David Jenkins Jr. had the ball at the top of the key. Someone came to set a screen. He waved him off. He was like, "No, I got it," and hit a turnaround with 1 second left on the shot clock. And when you're Duke, you just got to throw your hands up, because you played 29 seconds, a great D, and ultimately it didn't matter, resulted in 2 points for Purdue. Everyone on this team was firing at all cylinders. It was such a great game.
One person I think we absolutely have to give a shout out to, though, Ethan Morton. I've said this before on Twitter, and I'm going to double down on it. He is the smartest player in the conference. I'd say country, but Ivy League, some of them guys are pretty smart guys. Just the way he knows how to navigate against a defense. He knows who to go to, how to weave in and out so that he can get off a screen, and then he knows exactly who to pass to. It's just unbelievable how good he is. I know he had a turnover today, which is like his second on the season. It's incredible.
Wild.
I mean, he honestly looks like he's a player from the 1960s when he dribbles, and he passes like it too. He does, you know, full chest pass. It is fantastic. He knows when you get an offensive rebound, don't pass it right away. Wait for the defender to come off you before figuring out where people are. And I cannot get over how intelligent he plays. And he's starting to rub off on other players. I know we mentioned it on Twitter when he did the canceled the 2-for-1 during the Gonzaga game.
Yeah. Yeah, tell people about that, because I'm not sure everybody saw it.
I believe Gonzaga scored the ball with about 37 seconds left in the half. Ethan Morton, before the Mason Gillis, I think, or one of the other Purdue players, inbounded the ball, he told them to wait because you're allotted your 5 seconds to hold the ball. And the clock's still running during that whole time. So if you hold the ball until there's 31, 32 seconds, you essentially cancel the opportunity for the opponent to get a 2-for-1. So by the time Purdue shot, there was only, I think, 1 or 2 seconds left on the clock, and you can't dribble it up and get a better possession. Those 5 seconds make a huge difference.
Yeah, and true enough, Gonzaga did not score and had to just do a half-court heave on the ensuing possession. And that was, as you said, so, so smart by Ethan Morton. So hopefully that is something, as you said, that rubs off on the rest of the team. But, you know, Purdue goes 3-0 this weekend in the Phil Knight Invitational. Just absolutely phenomenal all-around basketball by everybody. So I wanted to see, and on KenPom, because obviously we don't have new rankings, we'll get those early next week, and those should be great for Purdue. And I want to ask you about that in a moment. But I pulled up the KenPom rankings to see where Purdue was after all of these games. And I want you to guess where Purdue is now ranked overall in KenPom.
After all these games, I would say 7.
Oh, you are so close. We are 8th. Purdue is listed 8th. Gonzaga, actually 7th, so still one above us. And right now, on adjusted offense, Purdue is 4th best in the country. On adjusted defense, Purdue 28th best in the country. So those are some pretty good numbers right there. We now are ahead of Indiana on KenPom. They are 11th. So really great stuff for Purdue. Just showed the world who they could truly be. And oh boy, I mean, just absolutely amazing. So rankings, new college rankings come out early next week, I believe Monday. Where do we think Purdue is going to land? They were 24th in the most recent rankings. Keep in mind, they beat number 6 and they beat number 8 along with an unranked West Virginia team in the last week here. So what do we think is going to happen come Monday?
So I know that the voters like to repeat themselves, and earlier this season.
Yes, they do. Oh, it's a real problem.
Earlier this season, Michigan State played Gonzaga really close. They beat Kentucky, and I believe they moved up 13 or 14 spots in the rankings in a single week. I think Purdue can do that again. I just think they'll be right around the 10 to 12.
It's unfathomable that this Purdue team would be 10 to 12, ranked 10 to 12. I mean, I assumed this season would be not a lost season, not a bad season, but when you lose as much talent as Purdue did, I thought it would be a difficult season, and it still may be. You know, keep in mind, we are only 6 games in, but Purdue has looked phenomenal. They beat number 6, they beat number 8, they beat them on neutral courts, and that Gonzaga game really was more of a home court for Gonzaga, and Purdue dominated in those games.
And West Virginia's receiving votes.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So they're a top 30 squad.
I think come Monday, I think Purdue will be ranked in the top 10. And so I'm so anxious to see what voters do. The voters continuing to rank teams just based on what they did previously is one of my biggest pet peeves, because it makes the preseason rankings matter so much when they're basically garbage. You're basing so much of it on assumptions and who you think a team is going to be and who they added and how they're going to gel and how they're going to mesh. But Purdue has actual results. If they ranked teams only on results, Purdue would be number one. Purdue would be number one come the new rankings. I mean, there's no doubt. They have the best resume of anyone in college basketball right now, bar none. I mean, come at me with a better program once this gets posted on Monday, but I don't think you can do it. So I think Purdue will legitimately be ranked in the top 10, and they will have earned it, and it's going to make every Purdue fan nervous, and we're all going to be terrified. But, man, what a ride this season has already been.
Absolutely.
Just 6 games
and
in.
To your point, I mean, the number one team in the country lost twice this week. North Carolina lost twice to an unranked Iowa State and Alabama in a consolation game.
In, like, four overtimes?
Oh, my goodness. It was absolutely brutal to watch. It was I don't think I had – I think I've had enough basketball weekend up until that point. And then you added four overtimes. So –
yeah, that's a lot of extra. That's a whole extra half of basketball right there.
I want to say like seven players fouled out.
Man, that's nuts. That's nuts. It was probably not very good basketball there at the end. No, so I mean that's gonna do it. You know that wraps up probably the greatest Purdue sports weekend of my lifetime. Basketball is on fire. Football is heading to the Big Ten championship game. I have applied for a credential for myself and Jed, another writer there on Hammer and Rails, waiting to hear back. I have no reason to think we would be declined. We get them every time we apply. But the deadline to apply, I believe, is Monday, and then they'll let you know on Tuesday. So I've already booked a flight, so I will be in attendance one way or the other, either with a credential or a ticket I buy off the street. So Ryan, are you planning on going?
So I'll be driving from Raleigh to Indianapolis, okay. About 9.5 hours.
And that was my question. You beat me to it. There we go. So we're going to record midweek like we always do. We're going to talk a lot about this Big Ten championship game. But Boiler Nation, you know, enjoy the hell out of this weekend. It was a lot of fun.
I've got one more thing one that's more. Exciting. Just now, Purdue Volleyball is making the tournament. So
hey,
they play
there
Tennessee.
We go. All right. Because yes, selection show was tonight,
so
wasn't
they
it?
They play Tennessee on Friday.
All right. There we go. Absolutely. Yet more good news for Purdue sports. So there we go. Dave Shondell and the Purdue volleyball team keep the streak going. Hopefully they can make a dent. I know it's been a rough year just because the Big Ten is so good. So we'll see what they can do when they get away from some Big Ten teams. So Boiler Nation, enjoy this weekend. I mean, what a ride it was. Everything went right. Now let's prepare to go into Indianapolis and absolutely shock the world. Boiler up, folks.